Welcome to the Tech Story Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Today's show is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free on me. Today's guest, Lindsay Stewart. She's the CEO and co-founder of Stringr. If you listen to this show or you do anything with Technori, you know we're into media. You know I'm into media. You know I love video. I love to find applications for video. Speaking of video, we are interviewing all of these different founders who are making pitches that you can invest in via equity crowdfunding on YouTube right now. And of course, follow the pitch reviews, hashtag pitch review, hashtag pitch reviews, hashtag Technori pitch reviews, hashtag Technori pitch, hashtag just about anything that sounds like pitch reviews. And I personally am reviewing these. Why I tell you this? I tell you this because I want you to watch, but I also tell you because it's video. It's different ways to use video. It's different applications that I think are interesting, commercially viable, but also fun. And it creates a way for us to play and dabble. We used to do Technori Feed. We did Technori Stories. These were all applications of video that was my vision of how to turn tech stories into something that's easier to consume and understand for the user, the listener, but also just fun to make, fun to watch. And I think the future of the world, the old pivot to video, if you read my blog I did a couple weeks ago on technori.com, you can subscribe to the newsletter there and get every blog. But that one in particular was about the pivot to video. A few years ago, Fox and everybody else pivoted to video and then immediately lost all their web traffic because they didn't quite understand what video was supposed to do for them. Was it storytelling? Was it assisting in a story? Was it the whole story? Was it entertainment? Was it background? They don't know. And a lot of businesses put a lot of pressure on the videographer to prove value. And that's wrong. The companies have to make the money. The companies have to figure out how to use video to make more money. The videographer's job is to create the right content for the right moment that help optimize that project of making money. And ultimately, I think we got kind of lost in that. And companies like Stringr exist to mend that fence, I think. It's a platform for videographers to professionally make money or do it as a hobby, to do on-site project or to just sort of submit content that can be used for other purposes and make money. And it's not necessarily a full-time job, or maybe it is. It totally depends. But what I do think it is there's an opportunity for those who want to be in videography professionally or for a hobby or for fun to make money doing it and to hone their craft. And it's obviously great for every brand who doesn't want to own the liability of hiring a full-time video team or hire an expensive agency that just sits there for the maybe we might build this thing, I'm not sure when type of scenario. It actually gives them the ability to only shop when they need it, to find video that is high-level production or low-level or just snippets. You figure it out. It's a million different ways that people use it. And I think platforms like this exist to make it easier, to make people who are not in the video business understand it a little bit more. And for those who are in the video business, to take advantage of their skill set. So this conversation goes all over the place, from Lindsay talking about the founding story, being at college and you know grad school, trying to figure out, is she going to be starting a business? Is she just learning business? She was a reporter, a very well-known producer for ABC, and it's a great story. And I think you're going to dig it. I also think you're going to learn a ton about the ins and outs of the video industry, and naturally you will learn about Stringr. So this is my interview with Lindsay Stewart, the CEO and co-founder of Stringr. So as a person who's run a company that started off as an event company and then turned into podcast and then video and then video and podcast and vlog and then Instagram and all these other things, we have always struggled to find good video talent and understand the value that they bring into the business and understand what is one video worth versus another. Is it just hourly editing, or is there creative? Is there a difference? How do I find people? How do I find the right videos? I think most people like myself in the content area that came out of a journalistic media background, I think they always have a very big disadvantage when they move into video because they don't quite assign the right value to the right things. So I'd love to know your thoughts in general, Lindsay, on like where the video world is. And then let's get into Stringr and like all of the like how the platform works and how people use it.
Yeah, listen, I mean, we're a video company, and so we think we're the center of the universe, not just the world. But you know, you make some really good points about what makes valuable video. And from it really kind of depends on what kind of media organization you are and what story you're trying to tell. If you are a breaking news organization, the quickest video in is the most valuable video to you, especially if you're trying to tell that story, you know, quite readily. However, if you are an enterprise, a corporation, a brand, you know, perhaps the most beautiful video, the most well-composed video is the most valuable video to you. So it really kind of depends on what kind of story you're trying to tell and, you know, what your own business model is. What we think at Stringer is the accessibility of video before us was really, really difficult. You would have to pick up the phone and hire someone. And if you didn't quite know what you were doing in video, it was a slow, laborious, and potentially pretty expensive process. Now that we have about 120,000 videographers worldwide on our platform, what we know is providing people with the tools to get the video that they want quickly and at a price point that's, you know, stomachable makes a lot of sense. And that was, of course, the first product that we built here at Stringer.
So, I mean, I look at this and I think of my early days with the podcast, and I had nothing. So I'm basically bartering with friends to video and edit for me. And it was pretty simple because we like this show. It's always been done as live. And then we started realizing the value of Instagram and that there was a little bit more, you know, and I'm sure you can remember this in the early days of video, like the pivot to video joke from like 4 years ago, everything was just on video. That's what it was. It was almost like akin to when newspapers went digital and they just put a PDF up. It was like, well, this is me talking. So here's a video. You want video, right? Here it is. And what we learned, obviously, like everybody else, is that that wasn't the case. People wanted unique things from video, and it could be super produced and expensive, or it could be a user reaction, or it could be a cut or a clip. There's a million things. And I'm just curious to you, you know, what was there a pivotal moment in your experience in video where you were like, people are going to want this thing, and we need to be able to offer videographers the ability to connect with clients and clients the ability to purchase video that is not just a recording of a guy talking, but rather adding different elements to it. Like, how did you see video moving?
Yeah, so we started the company about 6 years ago, and for a little background on me, I'm a former TV news producer. And so for me, you know, the tools at hand at the time were either our staff photographers, hiring a freelance photographer, or largely searching the internet on social media channels for the video we were seeking. And so what I saw, at least in my basic use case, was just kind of the need for more video more generally and the need for a technological solution that enabled me to request that video, have it come back in HD format, and be able to slice and dice it as I would like for, you know, a national news program. As you kind of look into, and I guess, you know, what was also maybe a year later, the joke, the pivot to video, where everybody was doing a video for everything, I think what we saw there is a couple of things. One is that not a lot of, you know, other types of media professionals really knew how to get into video, what story needed to be told with that. Some, you know, in the broadcast world, we talk a lot about, you know, what makes a visual story. And so we would go and do stories that, you know, would be best told with that medium. I think when you started talking to publishers, they struggled to know, like, you know, is the mayor's press conference the best visual story, or is, you know, a little kid doing good in their community the best visual story? And I think, you know, there's a very obvious answer there, which is, you know, anytime you can
not
show
the mayor, that's the obvious answer, not the mayor.
Right. Not the mayor. And so, you know, I think that comes when you think about kind of news video, that was, you know, the hard choices that a lot of these pivot to video units were trying to make. And in many times, spending a lot of money on segments that really didn't monetize or really didn't capture the eyeballs or even have the marketing results that they were looking for. And, you know, I think, though, what I think in terms of video is you are taking chances. You are spending some money where you might not have otherwise. And so you need a solution where you can take some calculated risks and not necessarily bet the farm with video either. Because some sometimes videos will surprise you in their success. And so, you know, I think we see that all over the internet sometimes, and we have certain clients that where we do end-to-end video production, not just sourcing the raw video. And, you know, I think they're sometimes surprised by the segments that really resonate with people and the ones that don't.
So I have a couple, usually I don't have agendas on my interviews. I like to just sort of hang and like go with it.
There's no
gotcha agenda here. This is just a space that I'm very, very into and very curious and take a similar approach in thought, I think, to you. And the two areas that I really am looking forward to digging in on the show, obviously we're going to get into the whole Stringer story and your story, but I think from an understanding of the business of video, the existence of video, there's two parts that are interesting. The one is from the content like creation side for the end user. You've been talking about this already, which is sort of that, like, what is the right use case for certain types of video and understanding what the purpose is. And then the second thing that I really want to dig in with you on this is going to be the value of videographers and sort of the change and shift of like that career. Because there's been a whole lot of changes where content in general has become cheaper and cheaper, and you've got people who are basically aggregating it, not just aggregating it, but like even just ripping and or creating kind of low quality video and selling it to people and not understanding that like some things should be that way and some things shouldn't be that way. And the value of the videographer is their ability to determine when and how that should be delivered. And so when I look at like my experience, and I think that you will find this interesting, I guess, when we had Technori, I remember distinctly, there was a videographer, I'm not going to throw them under the bus by any means, that they did a lot of our showcase events and things. And I just remember saying to him, like, I don't feel that recording my podcast or recording the event as a camera in the background is valuable. I don't think people are going to go watch something that they could have gone in person to. Like, it was never designed to be like for you who couldn't make it. It was like, it's an event. You went to the event to have the experience, not just like random video piece. I always felt that it should be a backdrop. Like if you could tell the story of the founder who came on and built this company, if I could show the user experience of the product they built or the gratification given by whoever experienced this company's product or service, that would align with the user. Or in another case, if we were telling a story, having sort of a slideshow of, call it video picture combo, where people could feel the emotion, good or bad or funny or not, around the story I'm telling you. The objective was for those like me who are not all that creative, when I read a story, my brain does not populate imagery in a way that really embellishes the story. I feel like I'm just reading words. And for people like me, if you could put a vision behind the words that they're hearing or reading, you've created an experience that is unlike anything else for them. And that to me was always like, how do we use video to storytell? How do we use it to make people feel what I'm trying to tell you? And I'm just curious how you feel about the evolution there. Because I think that a lot of the people who got into video, similar to your point, talking about just sort of throwing up the picture of the mayor, I think that they were missing, maybe it was because of money and not wanting to pay videographers, I'm not really sure. But I felt like from the get-go, there was a huge disconnect on how videography was used. Do you see what I'm saying? Or do you think I'm out of my mind? Or
No. I don't think you're out of your mind at all. I was fortunate enough to be an intern at ABC News when Peter Jennings was still alive. And yep. He would always say that storytelling is about capturing the soul and subtlety of a story. And so I think in this day and age where people do expect to see imagery around a story that, you know, capturing video in hard to reach places, capturing video with people who aren't necessarily interviewed, giving a number of different takes on any particular story, using the voices of others is what makes video so powerful. You know, it's one thing to have really great writing, and certainly there are some amazing journalists out there who really, I think, put together a nice story without any video at all. But if you look to what people expect these days, especially as, you know, I'm getting older and there's there's, you know, increasingly more younger people, they've grown up on kind of a video platform, so to speak, whether it's social media or YouTube or the like. And so I think it is the ability to gather a lot of video and then, to a different point that you made, repackage it in such a way that you are able to juxtapose that video so well to show what a lot of people are thinking, and that the voice for any particular story isn't monolithic. So I think that's, you know, it's kind of half the expectations of what readers and viewers believe they should be seeing. And then kind of the other piece is then how do you package it together? From our standpoint, we have partners and customers who are really adept at taking kind of our raw ingredient, which is raw video, and repackaging it to tell a very compelling story. And then we have other customers whose core competency isn't necessarily video, but perhaps is writing, for instance, and they're putting together great stories. And so we're able to put our toolkit or even some of our producing staff kind of in concert with them such that they can have that nice marriage of text and video. But I think throwing up video just for video's sake, you know, in certain circumstances, it can work, especially when it's kind of a live, capturing a live event, which we also do as well. But in other circumstances, it's really about aggregating a lot of original video. And you mentioned the word aggregation. There's a difference between going and seeing what's already out there in the universe and then asking for what you actually want. And so, you know, it's one thing to go onto social media and see, oh, there's, you know, this Black Lives Matter protest and that one. And those people shot that video for a very different purpose than for kind of agnostic or objective storytelling. But it's still very important to aggregate things from multiple geographies and getting multiple voices. So I think that's the value of video for news, and not to carry on. But then when you start going into, well, what if I'm a brand? What if I'm just trying to tell the story of my company? Again, I think it's really important to be thinking out what that story is, what you want people to see. And that's where a team like ours at Stringer or even Embed Studios, which works with brands and agencies, helps you think that out before we even go shoot a frame of anything. But again, I think the expectation is that video is most often accompanying some sort of text or other messaging that you're doing. I think you had a question also about the value of videographers.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think what you just said is the conversation that was missing for like the better part of the last, I'll call it not the last 4 years, but the first couple of years of the last four, where I think companies, whether that's sponsors that work with us who are like, oh, just throw together some video package, or storytellers, or even sites that I think generally speaking do a good job, but then we're lazy on video. And when I say lazy, it's that they didn't value the creator. They didn't enable the creator to showcase a value. And it just became this game of like, how do we get it up cheaper? How do we cut this cheaper? How do we make these cheaper? And at the end of the day, they'd never understood what you just went through, which is essentially that there are multiple, this is a multiple question test. This isn't just an, you know, and then there's essay too. Like there's all these different pieces that the experienced videographer and creator, producer, designer, marketing person, storyteller, whatever, that they know how to best shape this whole story for whatever audience that might be, whether it's marketing or journalism. And I think that it, at least in my experience, it led to a devaluing of creators, whether you're a writer or a producer of video or audio. It sort of became a, what's the hourly rate to have them punch the keys? And that is not how it goes, but that is the reality of the economy for it. And I feel like you guys have put a lot of power back in the videographer and the creator's hands to say, your product is wanted and it's needed. The people who want to need it don't necessarily know it. And we're going to help you align with them and then give you a lot of work and make money. And I think anything that enables creators and videographers to make money on their skill and not on their time would be great for the entire industry.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what I like to think about Stringer is, you know, every time one of our videographers goes out and shoots a video, they have the opportunity to make money, and it's not a dollar. Like if they were to go sell, you know, a still photo on Getty, you know, the amount of money that's coming back on that kind of transaction to the original creator per transaction is pretty small. That being said, we do have a crowd-based, format and relationship with a good number of our videographers where we offer up a lot of assignments that they choose to go shoot on spec. So that means if they shoot a video that is indeed not selected by our customers, then they don't get paid for that particular assignment, which, as you might imagine, doesn't make everyone super happy. But what it does do is creates a little bit of Darwinism where our best videographers not only have the ability to access those kinds of assignments where, you know, maybe they're in the right place at the right time for some breaking news event, but they also then start basically getting assignments that are higher end in nature. We really start discovering who are our best contributors and who we can lean on for shoots where, you know, our end customer has a bigger budget. So we have, a great system where we are able to kind of relay back and forth between the skill sets of our videographers and really discover people who honestly had an interest in videography. And may have done it in their past in some way, but do something else with their life otherwise. They may have a day job and then on the weekends do a little work for us. And those are the folks that I think we've made the kind of biggest impact with, the really talented people. I call them guys and gals with cameras in their closet that really enjoy shooting video, really enjoy storytelling, and then come to us because they want this outlet. And it's not just a hobby, they get to make some money as well. So listen, I think our videographer base is by far just as valuable as our customers are, and we are consistently trying to find avenues and ways for our best videographers to make even more money.
I love it. I think this is, you know, beats driving an Uber around, in my opinion. But you know, we talk about
that's
this
not
a
very
lot.
Creative.
Oh my God! Yeah, right.
as much as I love Uber too, so I want to live without that Uber either.
Yeah, well, it's true. If you're a camera person, maybe you can do Uber and put the camera in your car and stop and do some pictures. But I see the future of business, and this is like a decade long conversation about gig economy, and I think that it was always framed the wrong way. And I think that it's starting to reframe itself where the creators and those who choose to participate in the gig economy have some control. And it's like, no, I have other jobs. I have this, I work on this, I work on that. I make music, I write music, I trade music. You know, there's all kinds of things that you can do. And platforms like Stringer, I think, enable that, which is great. So let's dive into Stringer as a company, what it builds, what it does, how people work with it. What does that look like?
If you want to think of us most simply, is we're a very, probably the most efficient video production platform in the world now. We not only have this kind of fastball of being able to source video from a very dynamic, geographically diverse videographer population, which was our first product, but now we have the ability, well, we basically put the ability to do all the other steps of video production within our platform. You can source video. You can even go to our partners like Shutterstock and Getty to look for still imagery. You can then slap all of that on a non-linear editor timeline all within our platform. You can request live video and then have it stream directly into your content management system from the Stringer platform. You can publish your video. We can provide you an iframe link where once you're done cutting a video, you can immediately ship it to your own website or digital platform, make it really easy to broadcast and show off your work. You can also take the video that you have created and say, you know what, it's great for my site, but I also want to resell it to other partners who also might be interested in it, which kind of gets to the key monetization problem that a lot of people face with video. How do I create something great, but also warrant the cost that is associated with video that so many people worry about? So we have consistently added product after product, all with the aim to make video production easier, faster, and thereby more cost effective. You can take a producer like I used to be, and I used to produce maybe a story every other day, and granted I was in a pretty plush world of network news, but now I could take producers and they could produce multiple quality stories every day because they are working with our videographer network, but then editing packages and not having to drag and drop and bring it into different systems. I think the platform play gets to one of the points you made earlier, which is, you know, and the pivot to video, everyone was trying to figure out how to make video cheaper, cheaper, cheaper. And they were constantly applying that pressure to the original source of that video, as opposed to looking at the overall workflow, which was very inefficient. And so what we have done is we've made the workflow efficient and thereby saved some money in other parts of the video production process.
Yeah, and I think that was what I was trying to get to originally on this really, is that like that platform approach it is, you know, and you mentioned this, you said, you know, some videographers might be dissatisfied with the fact that they might shoot something that doesn't get them any money. But the reality is the greater good here, which I think you have greatly influenced, is that companies that were not in the business of creating video, which is to say, yes, they might have had video and it was assistant, but they're not a film production company. They're not a docu production company. They're not a company that does video production for marketing or whatever. They don't understand it and it's not part of their business model. And it just becomes another line on the bottom line. And I feel like, to your point, they made the creators basically be responsible for the price. And it was like, that's not at all how this is supposed to go. Like, it's your job to figure out how to make money and tell, and my job to tell the story to help you make more money. It's not my job to make you money. And so what you create is the ability for anyone in really anything. It could be marketing, it could be a brand, it could be a news company, it could be, it really could even be a film production company or Instagram channel, to learn how to capture the best video for the moment, to acquire the best video for the moment that they need, but also not be responsible for the other 48 hours a week that videographers may be working on other things, which essentially takes all that pressure away. And I think long-term, I think it's much better for the videographers because it enables them to use their skill set to make money like all the rest of us. We all have passions. We all have things we're good at. We spend the bulk of your time in your business, growing the business, selling it, doing the accounting, whatever it is your sharp spot. And then the other stuff you do, you may not love, you're just competent at it and you do it. And this is the same thing for creators. And it's like I said before with musicians, it's very similar. Like they might, you know, might not like making jingles for a buck, but they can. And so you can pay the bills with your jingles and then work on the big projects and not have to basically explain your value to your client or to your boss on a regular basis, which I think is what really took the life and energy out of the videographers that I personally have worked with.
Yeah, I mean, listen, working in any creative industry, especially getting your start in any creative industry, is a really tough, it's a tough world. I remember trying to get my first job in TV. I think I spent 3 months sending out tapes, like basically a producer tape that I put together while I was in college. It's a really rough spot. I think what's so nice about a platform like this, and there's some other platforms that are analogous for other kinds of creative talent, is that, you know, if you're just beginning but you're super talented, there are assignments you can go out and try and you can start building your resume, your portfolio. If you're a hyper talented person that charges thousands and thousands of dollars a day, you know, those gigs are not, you know, they're not every day. So you do have some extra time on your hands to pick up some extra money, do some extra projects with, you know, an organization like ours. And I think that's what's so nice about platforms like ours, is that you can decide how much you want to participate with Stringer. If you want to do a couple assignments a month, great. If you want to do one assignment a year, great. If you want to do three assignments a day, fine. But it's all your choice, and it's based on your availability. And truly, it centers the power back at that ultimate, you know, the ultimate videographer and creator to make the decisions that they want that fit their life best. So that's why I like it. I mean, and honestly, like as a person who started a company, I really like the autonomy of starting my own company where I get to make my own decisions. And I think those are the sorts of people we try to attract from, you know, our creator and, you know, videographer base.
And honestly, the time could not be better. I think we're in a place now where, you know, whether you're an Instagram influencer, a freelance videographer, photographer, whatever the case may be, we're hitting a point where people can monetize their passions or their accidental passions. They took the shot and it just happened to have a bird fly into their head and now it's famous on Instagram. That's a product. That's a picture or a video that could be used in a million different ways. And having platforms like this and Popular Pays and even Cameo and all these, like I think video, it's now in everyone's hand on their phone, and the level of video quality depends on the job and on the producer. But I do think that your timing couldn't be more perfect, because all of these different individuals who are accidental videographers or, you know, purposeful professionals, I think that platforms now exist and enable them to make, it could be only $1,000 a year, but you know what? That could be a family trip. I mean, it's a cheap trip, but it could be one. You could make $100,000 even. It's
during
crazy.
This whole craziness, we had people saying, you know, this gig that we did for you guys allowed me to pay my rent, and I just, you know, lost my other job because, yep, you know, there's so much economic uncertainty right now. And, you know, I think we've had the opportunity, and I'm glad for it, to really change people's lives. I can't tell you how many times we get, you know, thanks, I was able to fix my car, that sort of stuff. And, you know, that's a positive moment in your life. I know I've been there in mine where, you know, some extra money is worth having.
To put that in context for listeners, I mean, to be totally honest, if you went back, I mean, I could tell the story of my mom, but I mean, even using people like 15, 20 years ago, if you wanted side cash for me in high school to buy a car, I bused tables at the Village Links. My mom was with, you know, obviously married to my dad, and we're trying to figure out how to make ends meet. And she takes up a second job at Walgreens. You know, she's a teacher and she has to come home and then leave and go to Walgreens or wherever she, you know, whatever. I don't remember if it was Walgreens, whatever place it was, and work behind the desk. And it's like, that's not something you want to do. I mean, maybe it is, but I doubt it. If you could do something that you're passionate about. Yeah. Right.
Right.
and this is like, it's a pride thing. Like, sure, I worked to make sure I got the ends meet, but like, if we now have the ability to use our passion to make money, like, and you're not forced, you can just do it or don't do it. And that sure, in my mind, beats the hell out of being forced to go, you know, for a high school kid to go mow a bunch of lawns in the heat. If they don't want to do that, but they also know how to string together some videos, why not? Like, I think it's a great opportunity. It changes everything to me.
Well, Brian, who founded the company with me, he and I always joke about, you know, how we had to hustle so hard certain times to make money when we were kids. And yeah, this was, to me, this would have been a nice application of the things I was interested in. And, you know, again, it's not busing tables, it's not work in retail, all of which are very honorable jobs. But again, finding those jobs are not super easy either. You know, you have to go in, you got to hoof it, you got to apply, maybe they're full. Like, it's this whole thing. Whereas if you are a good videographer and you really feel passionate about it, you sign up for our app and then you can look at the assignments in your area and see if there's something you want to do.
Well, and you know, I think there's another piece of this and we'll lean into your founder story here in a second, but I think one of the big problems with, and this happens in school a lot too, in grad school in particular, you spend a lot of time, especially if you have to have like a side job, you spend a lot of time not honing your craft. You're just making money. It's dead time. Like, that is time you'll never get back. You did it. You slaved through it to get the money and that was it. And this provides an opportunity to actually continue to hone your craft. And it may not be your intended end game goal, but if it allows you to continue to practice and get reps and make some money along the way, then you're always moving in the right direction. It's not just lost time. And I think there's going to be a platform like this for everything, different use cases, different businesses, different industries. And I think the more of these platforms, the better, the more opportunity for people who have dreams of achieving a certain thing and at least making, even if it's tiny money, getting a chance to at least be focused on the proper goal. And that's what I think you guys have done. And I use this as a segue into your story as a founder and how you pivoted from your career into this, because I suspect that when you started this, you had to figure out a way to make ends meet for yourself and the business simultaneously. And the objective hopefully was that whatever you were spending your time on, it was on stuff that was, you know, profitable and or purposeful for this business. Otherwise you're just scrambling. What was that whole transition like? What did the story look like when you realized this idea was viable?
So, you know, I was sitting in the LA Bureau of the ABC Network newsroom, and fortunately there's an amazing, he's still there, amazing bureau chief there, so shout out to him, but who allowed me to basically work, I don't know, it was like 3 to 4 days a week. And I was also in business school. And so I was able to, I had a little extra time in my hands for the first time in my career, because usually when you're a network news producer, you are just being sent from one place to the next, which is very exhilarating, but on the other hand, doesn't give you a lot of headspace to, like, you know, truly suss out an idea. I was also in business school, which honestly was an entirely different framework than I had kind of grown up with in kind of the news world, that really helped me think about things in a different way and, you know, how to put a business together. But more importantly, it introduced me to a number of really smart people who were quite honestly smart in things I knew nothing about. So, when I had the idea for Stringer, the initial concept at least, I was sitting in the ABC newsroom just putting a story together and just wishing I had more video and had the ability to request more video from harder to reach places. you know, I brought this concept into a class where we had to do one of those, you know, 1 minute elevator speeches for, you know, just to kind of tick the box of a requirement for the class. And a good number of really smart people from my cohort in business school, you know, came to me and said, I want to work on this idea. I thought they were crazy. I didn't go to business school to start a company, to be quite honest. And then Brian McNeil, who founded the company with me, he's the one who really came to me. He's like, no, I think this is a great idea. He had a former product management experience at, you know, experience at Microsoft. And then after that was a management consultant. And he just started building models and what, you know, wireframes. And he started throwing all of this into a Dropbox based on a minute long speech. And that's where really Stringer took off. We had this really nice, you know, sandbox to play in where, you know, I had friends sitting next to me at lunch that were, you know, engineers for major tech companies who helped us put the tech stack together. We also had a good number of very smart professors that we could ask about marketing or really any topic as it related to statistics and regression analysis, which is actually a pretty important part of our strategy. And so I think for me, it was this like, you know, the nexus of opportunity where I had this little idea. But on the other hand, I was sitting with all of these people who were very energized about working on something new and had a set of expertise that was quite differentiated from mine. So that's the beginning of Stringer. We started it in business school. We fostered it for a little while in some pilot markets. And then we moved to New York to see if we could really give it a go. And, you know, 6 years later, we count most of the major media brands as our customers and 120,000 videographers and then this full production suite within our web-based platform. So it's pretty exciting to have like, you know, an idea all by yourself and then have other people really rally around it.
No, I totally agree with you. I love the stories that are like this. My own story is very similar to this. I was at Medill and I was listening to all of the media. This is where it's going to go. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, am I the only one in the room who sees like the end of the cliff? Like, are we paying attention to this? And it was just like, no. And I ended up like leaving for a little while to go to Kellogg, which is the business school at Northwestern, just to like figure out how to do the business side of this and then go back into Medill and finish everything up with like a whole business model. And I just remember a couple people who were like quietly sitting in the back of the room, like, oh, I think I'm with you. I think this doesn't look good. And we just sort of jumped into it.
Is that so neat when you look across a room and somebody's raising their hand to help you and you view them as infinitely smarter than
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah. Well, they saw it. I was just kicking the tire around. I didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah, no, it's one of the best compliments I've ever gotten in my life. I'm not quite sure if I'll ever get another one that profound.
Oh, no doubt about it. I love the story. I love the platform in general. And obviously, as you know from listening to this show, I'm very much a media bum. And I look at the video thing. I think that we truly are entering a new world of video and the applications are just going to become almost ubiquitous. I mean, even going to like shopping, like how we buy things and looking online and seeing the video that shows someone walking with it. That is something that someone had to film somewhere
almost,
along the line.
Almost nothing is untouched by video these days.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. And I mean, and because at the very base, and I think this is where our, you know, our collective expertise comes in. Everybody wants to tell their story, and even brands, I mean, brands might be the first and most adept at telling their stories to kind of high-end ad agencies. But now the number of reps that you have to do to kind of keep up campaigns and all of that really is so profound that you need a resource where you can keep telling a story. And it's, you know, it's almost like a serial, not like a
motion picture. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome. I really enjoy this. Where do people go to get on the platform, whether it's to use it or to sign on as a videographer? How do people learn more about it?
Yeah. So you can go to stringer.com. It's S-T-R-I-N-G-R, no E, we don't buy vowels.com. And then if you are, and that's more on the platform side and then on the news side. And that's how videographers sign up. And then if you're interested in to see our more polished work, how we work with brands and agencies, we just launched Embed Studios, E as in Edward, M as in Mary, B-E-D, studios.com. And that's where you can check out some of our work that is more high end.
Awesome. Lindsay, I really appreciate this. This is a great conversation. I love the topic. I hope we can stay in touch and hope a lot of the companies and people listening to this podcast learn and either jump on it. I know we have a lot of creators on the side, and we also have a ton of brands that are trying to figure out how to use video and implement it into their marketing. So I hope they check it out, and best of luck to you guys.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. It was fun.
Absolutely.